Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from prideofdetroit.com. Eric, training camp is nigh.
Oh, yeah.
Starting on, for the fans.
For the fans, it starts
July 30th.
Saturday. It opens to the media on Wednesday. So we'll have a
3-day head start.
Yeah, but, you know, with the acclimation rules, they're going to be without pads for at least 2 days, right? And then who knows if they'll go into pads on Friday. They might do their first day in pads on Saturday. I fully expect them to be in pads on Saturday because the fans are there. I don't know if I'll get a padded practice in ahead of that, but I know for sure it'll be shorts and shells for the first 2 days.
All right. So in this podcast, we're going to discuss our expectations position by position as we roll into training camp. Any news besides us? There's nothing. It's very quiet.
I mean, they signed Isaiah Bugs, the reserve nose.
Oh, yeah. Nose tackle.
Nose tackle, right? Yep. Played at Bama. I think we'll talk about him though. We won't get ahead of ourselves there. Just that's the only news or note we should probably mention at the top here.
All right, so let's dive right in. Let's start at the quarterback position. What are we going to end up seeing out of the group? It's going to be mostly Goff taking all the snaps, right? I'm sure we'll get a little Boyle, a little bit of Blau mixed in.
Yeah, well, they rotated Boyle and Blau through the second team in the spring, and they said that was purposeful because each player had earned that opportunity to start with the second team. And the only trend that kind of held true with that was whoever played with the second team looked like a better quarterback that day. And so I think that kind of speaks to the fact that there's a little bit more depth on offense than there is on defense, but also that once the depth kind of falls, there's a ledge that it falls off of as well when you start getting to those like third team units. Now, will they get better as the training camp goes on? Certainly. But for now, you want to be on that second team if you want to look good, if you're one of the quarterbacks anyway. So I expect that rotation to continue. I expect Goff to be the stud that they go to right off the bat and try and feed him all of the good choice cuts and let the other guys fight for scraps on the second team.
Now, with all three of these guys spending a year, you know, with this regime, obviously Ben Johnson's a new the coordinator, but he was around last year. Mm-hmm. They're not going to really have to rotate. The offense is basically in, right? We're going to be just looking at new different wrinkles, right? Getting a little more in depth with the offense, right? Should we expect something else?
They said there's more nuance to it this year, that they're keeping some of the things that they really liked from the back half of the season, but they've said that they're really trying to alter a lot of things that they didn't like, which could mean we're in for a lot of changes, or it could also mean that, you know, it's going to be a lot of what we saw at the end and then, you know, a sprinkled amount of changes. It's kind of like it could go either way right now, based on what they've told us. I know it's all new terminology. And so there's a little bit of a learning curve that goes with that, because they were using Anthony Lynn's playbook. Now they're switching to Ben Johnson's playbook. So the terminology is a little bit different. Concept is still the same. It's still West Coast based, right? So not going to be, there's still a lot of the terminology will transfer, but there's a lot of differences to it. They're also trying to increase the tempo in which they get the play in, not necessarily like tempo, like they're trying to run fast or something like that, but they're trying to get the play in so that they have time to adjust early, run some play action, run some motion, run some pre-snap, get some pre-snap reads and stuff like that, so that they're not feeling up against the clock. So there will be a lot of changes, but with this new playbook, but for the most part, it's, you know, it's all kind of speculative right now on what exactly we will see.
All right, moving over to the running backs, and I think number one, the number one thing we need to see out of training camp with the running backs is do not get DeAndre Swift hurt.
Yeah, right. Because like he's your most dynamic runner, right? And we talked about this last week when we were doing our roster stack, is that you have to change the game when your game plan when he's not in the game, because he is just that dynamic of an athlete. Like he played on about 70% of snaps of the games where he was healthy. And so that's because he's so dynamic. So yeah, you want to keep Swift fresh. You know, you want to get him his reps so that he's not looking rusty. But you want to go to Williams. He's going to be, you know, he's always a fun character. He doesn't mind putting in the work. He's a nice number two. He's a guy I'd like to see a lot of. And then just let those young guys battle. You know, like we didn't get a chance to see them in pads in the spring because it's against the NFL rules. But so it's really hard to get an idea of where the running backs are. But now that when the pads come on and they get to hit a little bit and they get to run a little bit more full speed, this is really where we'll get to see some separation between the back end of that running backs room, because right now there's not a ton of clarity beyond the top two.
Hard knocks alert. Now, yeah. Is Greg Bell a candidate to be followed around by the filming crew?
I don't think Greg Bell will, unless you know something I don't.
No, I don't. Well, I'm trying to play the guessing game. Do you think it's going to be Jamar Jefferson or a Craig Reynolds, or do they eschew the running backs? They're going to follow Goff. I mean, if we can go back a second, because this is Goff's third appearance on Hard Knocks. Yeah. So they have to like continue his chronicle. You know, last time we saw him, he was chipping golf balls from his backyard down into the green below. And they would go, you know, flash over to his coach's office where there would be no binders on the desk and nothing on the computer screen and, you know, nothing anywhere. Very not surprising that he got fired at the end of the season. Actually, that was two Goffs ago. That wasn't the last Goff. That was two Goffs ago.
Sorry. Yeah. I think, look, this is a critical year for Goff. And so he needs to come out and be ready. He can't have the hiccup that he had last year. That just can't happen. But yes, moving to back to running back.
Yeah, that was poor podcasting. Yeah, poor setup.
I think Jamal is the guy that Hard Knocks gravitates to.
That's and true. Then, a lot of personality.
And then I think preseason game one will kind of be that determining factor of who they start following after that, right? Because Jamal's going to be the setup. Swift is an interesting character on his own, is, you know, his dad being the you know, having the gym and being the weightlifting guy, right? And then so yeah, like I think there's natural stories with the top two guys over the first couple of weeks, and then they'll get into those deeper guys, and it's whoever has the better game against the Falcons in preseason game one.
Also, Kabinda, he was a focus when they had Hard Knocks with the Raiders. So yeah, he's another candidate.
Easy story with him, right? Because he was a favorite of theirs that season.
And like then they assumed he was going to end up with the Raiders. He gets cut and then gets signed by the Lions.
Yeah. And they even had that moment where he was taking the phone call to go, that he was going to Detroit in the car in the Raiders parking lot, I think he was. And then he calls his mom after, and that was like because his mom was like this important factor in that year's shows that
season.
That thank you. I'm struggling with words.
No, it's all right. That injury may have affected your brain, your motor skills.
But yes, easy story there. Now they've already started interviewing some of these players, of which one of the guys is in the next position group that we're going to talk about.
And that's the wide receiver group. Are you talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown?
I am. They've already shown pictures of HBO sitting down with St. Brown. So
now HBO a Real Sports about his family.
I think it was
Real Sports. Years ago.
At USC, though.
His father also a bodybuilder. He was a Mr. Universe, if I'm not mistaken.
He was. And then you have a brother in the NFL who was with one division rival, is now with another division rival. And it's just, some of these stories write themselves, man.
I guess one thing we're really going to, I mean, if we could get off the Hard Knocks trail and back onto the wide receivers, one thing that everybody's going to be interested to see is Goff's chemistry with DJ Chark. We know he can get the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown. We know he likes Josh Reynolds. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see him really throw to Jameson Williams, right? Because it's all likelihood he's going to be on the PUP list.
He's on the NFI. Yesterday,
oddly enough, when we're well, when everybody saw how he got injured.
Right. Let's address that. Like the difference between the PUP and the NFI is really only the time and location of where the injury happened. So if it happens at a football facility, doing a football training for a football activity or doing a football activity, then that's considered physically unable to play because you got injured during football on football premises. If you are injured off premises, or if you were injured before you joined the NFL, then you go into the non-football injury list because it was, they consider anything that wasn't at their facilities non-football. Okay. Because college football is non-football technically to the NFL. Right. So because he was injured in college, he goes to the NFI list. Now that has no bearing on time frame, when he can come back. All of that is the exact same as the PUP, which means he can come off NFI or, and then same thing is true with the guys on the PUP. They can come off NFI or PUP at any time during training camp. If they stay on the PUP or NFI throughout training camp, they're eligible to go onto it for the regular season. And then if they do that, they're out for the first 4 weeks of the regular season. It used to be six, now it's four. And so everything is exactly the same. It's just terminology from an NFL standpoint. But yeah, Jameson's on the NFI. So we'll see what happens with him. Will he come off? Will he stay on? It's hard to tell. And I don't think we're going to get a good answer on that, even when we get a chance to talk to Campbell.
Is Trinity Benson an ex Hard Knocks guy? I'm trying to remember. Probably not.
Well, he was with Denver, so no. Yeah, right?
So no. Yep. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of any other connections we'll have to keep our eye out for. Are you going to get a chance to meet with these people?
The Hard Knocks people?
Yeah. Yep.
Not that I know of yet. I mean, who knows? Who knows, though? They, if they find something they like, I mean, I'm going to be wearing my very plain, nice clothes, and you know, so I don't have to be blurred out for wearing logos. Sure. And no, I don't know. I mean, they have not announced any anything right now, or haven't asked us about anything yet.
All right, want to flip down to the tight ends?
Not yet. Let's talk a little bit more about the receivers. Like we know the top three, but like beyond that, you know, I think a lot's up in the air. What we saw in the spring was Cephas, Raymond, and Trinity Benson were with the twos, and I think that translated well to why you saw a success out of quarterback two, right? Whereas quarterback three was throwing to your UDFA guys like Corey Sutton, Khalil Pimpleton, and Josh Johnson. Tom Kennedy got in on that third team too, as well. So it was a little bit rougher with the UDFA guys than it was. And with the offensive line three, which we'll get to in a second, it's a little rougher with them too. So yeah, you know, can any of those younger guys break up into that top six? I don't know. I mean, it didn't look like it, you know, even when they were rotating guys out of the first unit, it was still Cephas and Raymond that were the guys that were moving into the top unit. So it's a tough road at receiver this year to try and crack through. And they've got probably seven guys competing for six spots. Williams, obviously on the NFI, could take him out of the conversation. And then I still think Khalil Pimpleton has a chance to make some noise, but he's so repetitive to Khalif Raymond. I don't know if he can separate himself from it.
Now, Tom Kennedy, does he even practice, or they just know what they're going to get out of him?
He does. He's very quick, right? Like that's his signature. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
there's a reason why he's been around for years.
Yeah. And he's very reliable. I mean, that's a big thing. He's very reliable. But Pimpleton is like a different level quick. And with Pimpleton around, Raymond has decided that to show off a little bit more of his quickness as well. And Raymond is really on a different level as well. And then when, I don't know if you saw the Lions put out a video, like who's the fastest guy on the team, like half of the guys said it was Khalif Raymond. So, you know, Raymond's in a good spot. Contract works for him. He's got everything Pimpleton does, but more. And he seems like he really has a good foothold on a spot as like wide receiver 4 right now.
All right. Flipping over to the tight ends. Tight end might get a lot of focus since it's Dan Campbell's old position.
Yeah.
And we're going to be seeing plenty of Dan Campbell.
You got a Pro Bowler there too in Hawkinson.
Yeah. Yep.
So that helps.
One who wants a contract extension. So they'll be talking about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Wright, James Mitchell coming off a torn ACL.
Now he was not on the NFI. Ooh, which means he is practicing. So that's a good thing. Now his ACL injury was 2 months, almost three, like 2.5 months ahead of Jameson Williams. So this is on target for Mitchell playing and you know, getting ready to compete. And it looks like he is. So that's a good sign for Mitchell. That really makes that tight end 2 competition a little bit more wide open. Don't forget Devin Funch is here.
Devin Funch is his last stand. So that might end up being something.
I mean, that
Derek
alone
Deese Jr., his dad played in the NFL.
Yeah, that'll get a passing mention. You know what I mean? You know, and Zylstra's brother plays in the NFL. So that might get a passing mention as well. Griffin played with Dan Campbell in New Orleans. So, I mean, that's at least a footnote. But I do think Funchess is the guy. I mean, he's a name player who's switching positions.
He's a name player here.
No, but he's a name. I mean, he's drafted in the second round. You know what I mean? Like that's enough for HBO and to have the local connection and switching positions. And I think there's enough there that they're going to try and like chew on that bone a little bit before he gets cut in the first or second wave there. So, who knows? Maybe he can surprise.
Who knows?
As well, yeah, right?
He might have a renaissance.
Yeah, which would be
tight end
too. I mean, that'd be fantastic, right? Because that just means that your depth is deeper.
All right, switching to the offensive line, you want to go from the outside. And well, let's just talk about them as a whole because they seem to be
starters.
It's a nice group. You go with Sewell. There's a lot of football in his family. He kind of wanted to be a Lion when he got – there might be a lot of that. Like, who would want to be a Lion?
I mean, right? Sewell is just – he's just a big personality for
and he's gonna fight
big
somebody.
Player. He is. He's going to fight Hutchinson. I mean, he's going to.
So they got to follow him.
I mean, that is going to be – the matchup to watch. Like that matchup is clearly ahead of every other matchup that you're going to see. And then, there's some others that are going to stand out there as well, but that Sewell Hutchinson matchup is going to be like standing room only around that competition because, you know, like last year when the first practice they were padded, when they separated into defensive linemen, and then they had the skill players in front of where the media was. So the way it works is the media has like a couple different places that they can go that are kind of like roped off from like just general fans so that they don't have fans going into those stands so that the media can get in there and get viewing angles and stuff like that. And last year, the first padded practice that they had, they stopped the action in front of all of the media, and the skill players stayed, and the offense and defensive linemen moved to the section that was the reporters were not in. So myself and Nick Baumgartner and I think a couple other people, we just immediately bolted for the other because we're offensive and defensive line junkies. But most of the people kind of stayed, but like it was fascinating. Like just to see like the Aleem McNeil, Frank Ragnow battles like in the trenches, like that was just awesome. And I expect this year when they split like that, that everyone goes, because everyone's going to want to see what Sewell and Hutchinson have. I mean, look, I keep saying Sewell and Hutchinson, but Hutch is going to get matched up against Decker too. And I, you know, that's going to be a really fun one to watch as well. So a lot of very interesting, fun battles. And I do think the offensive line has an advantage. And I expect them to win a lot of the battles, or especially the one-on-ones early. But
early and late
to swing. Well, yeah, but I expect to see a little bit of swing. We need to see
this unit dominate, because they have the potential to be a top five unit in the NFL. And actually, like, the ceiling for this offensive line should be the best in the NFL. That should be the unit's goal, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, stuff's going to happen, and you know, but it's there, you know, like, yeah. It's pretty much agreed upon nationally that, hey, this is one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. And you got to give the Bob Quinn regime some credit. It's the only thing they've done. I know Sewell rounds it out, but like, yeah, they brought in a lot of everybody else that's on that line. It's going to be very important for them to stay healthy through training camp too.
They could draft offensive linemen. That was certainly one thing they could do. An advantage. If this offensive line didn't play a snap in the preseason, I would not care, as long as they were healthy going into week one, because they do. They have the potential to be dominant. Like, when you look at all the rankings that are out there right now of, like, the different position groups, the Lions are, like, third in, like, almost everyone's rankings except for Football Outsiders, which they were, like, in the teens. Well, yeah, and when we asked them about that, they said essentially – that they didn't think the guards were that good. I guess they didn't see that Jackson was a Pro Bowler or something. I'm not sure, but how much
does the Pro Bowl mean anymore?
Well, right. Maybe that's pretty what easy it is.
To get in.
They didn't seem to like the Lions guards. And I get that. I understand that. You've got a third year player in Jonah Jackson. You got Vitae, who, you know, was signed to be a tackle, and now he's a guard. Here's the thing. I don't agree with it, but I can understand if that's what their opinion is. But I think when you play in between Decker, who's arguably a top 10, top 12 left tackle in the league, I think a top 10 left tackle.
That's
top
fair. 10 or 20. He's in that 10 range.
12. Yep. And then
that's fair. He's fine. Play, solid.
And then you put, and then you've got a guard, and then you've got Ragnow, who is arguably the best center in the league.
According to Madden, he's the second best center in the league.
Behind
who? Not the John Madden. But.
Oh, right. But behind John, what, Corey Lindsey, or is that who it is?
I think that's who it was. I can't remember. I was looking at the ratings the other day.
That's the one that usually that's been above him before. And then you have another guard, and then you have Sewell, who, as we've talked about, has the potential to be the best tackle in the league. You know what I mean? Like, but he's not there. He's getting there. He's definitely a top 10 right tackle, and he's in that conversation for top 20 overall tackle. And he's on his way, man. If he takes that leap, like most people are expecting, he could be a monster. I mean, he's already a monster. He could just be like an unstoppable monster. And you can put average guards in between that group and they'll look good. So now after that,
Wait, bad news. Okay. Yeah. Bad news on Frank Ragnow. Corey Lindsley's number one.
Okay.
Ryan Jensen, number two. Jason Kelsey, number three. That's Rodney Hudson, number four.
Yeah, it's all wrong.
Frank Ragnow, number five. So,
no.
I thought it was two, but yeah, know, there's my memory for you.
He was, yeah, it's probably because he's coming off injury. Doesn't Madden adjust their ratings as they go?
During the season, you'll see some adjustments, and you can update your roster.
It won't be long. It won't be long. Frank Ragnow
took it personally.
Frank's the best player on this team. He is, and I love that he's your pivot. Okay, the backups have potential, but they're not great. Right, like they're good, but they're not great. I mean, you could argue that Evan Brown is an above average reserve, and I wouldn't, it'd be hard time arguing with that with you, especially because he played well in the reserve role last year as a temporary starter last year. I thought Tommy Kramer showed upside. And so again, if you put him between Frank and Sewell, he's going to look better than he might be. potential's there. Stenberg is getting all kinds of hype, right? And so, but that interior, those three guys, they have to be able to beat Onsarike and Cornell. And they didn't, they weren't doing that on a consistent basis in the spring. So they've got to show up like that if they want to, you know, give people more confidence in the reserves. Now, Matt Nelson, we know what he is. Dan Skipper, we know what he is. And then when you get to the third team, it's a bunch of UDFA guys and Ryan McCollum. So I've been criticized for being a little bit hard on Ryan McCollum, but I just think, when you're a third center and you're basically only play center and you have Evan Brown and Ragnow ahead of you, it's a tough road. You're probably not going to make it. So I apologize for the McCollum people that don't like that, think I'm being a little harsh, but he's got the hardest road. Deese has the hardest road to the roster of any player on this roster. It's the hardest one.
There are 11 right tackles in Madden 23.
Yeah,
that have a rating of 80 or better. Coming in at number 11 is Penei Sewell. The player's rated ahead of him, which I understand, he's a second-year player.
Sure.
Although, all right, so Lane Johnson's number one, sure. 92. Tristan Wirfs, number two, 91. Sure. Ryan Ramchick, Lyle Collins, Braden Smith, Elkton Jenkins, Rob Haverstein, Trent Brown, Brian O'Neill, Taylor Moton. And
so,
then,
it should be like four on that list then. you know, I mean, or will be four probably by the end of the season, but okay. Yeah. So, I mean, look, that's the offensive line. It's the top unit should be good. The second unit needs to be a little bit better. They're expected to be a little bit better. Third unit is a problem right now, but again, it's not unsurprising with UDFA guys. It's the same thing. Same problem we're having that we're seeing at receiver, right? We're seeing the UDFA guys have a little hard time adjusting in the spring. Hopefully they adjust a little quicker in the fall. It still might take a couple of weeks, but typically they'll either come around or they won't be along for the roster anymore. So we'll see how that whole unit ends up cracking out.
Just a note, Decker, they have a seven tied for 14th.
Oh my gosh.
Right in our range.
Yeah.
And it's 80. There's a couple guys, you know, there's like two guys, right, whatever.
All right.
Moving on. Now, well, you got me all intrigued now. This is something I've seen in passing over the last, you know, few weeks. Sure. And now it's like, well, I want to know what they all are now. And of course, it's in the middle of the podcast.
Well, you know what? Look, this is a three-win team. So I'm not surprised.
They have to be rated accordingly.
Yeah, I get it. Now, do you see anyone else getting a little Hard Knocks love other than Sewell?
It's hard. But
Frank?
Well,
I think Frank with his fishing show.
Zine Obeid, right?
Because
he's not
local.
He's local, and he good wasn't story. Born in this country, right?
I don't remember if
he I don't want to say that.
I know.
Because they made, like in the past couple seasons, you know, a player who has not grown up playing football, but, you know, came to football at a later age. That seems to be something they like to follow.
Well, he's got a great story for that, right? Because he grew up in the area. He fell in love with the team. That's what got him to go into football. And then, you know, you go to Ferris and you're starting there. And now you get a shot. And I mean, it's again, yes, very natural, good story. I think Frank Sewell, Obeid, those are great stories that they can make more out of.
I don't want to get that wrong.
Okay.
Well, he is a local, but he wasn't in football right away, or maybe he was.
Correct. No, he his love for the Lions grew before his.
Maybe that was it. Grew. That could be it. Now that sounds a lot more familiar.
Okay.
All right, flipping to the defensive side. But I wouldn't be surprised if he would be the other guy they would follow
for that. It's a great story. Great story.
Flipping to the other side of the ball, we'll start with the defensive lineman right in the middle with your favorite, Aleem McNeil. and the other defensive tackles, Levi Onsarike. I could see them looking at the young guys. Or maybe Brockers, because he's old and he's headed out. And
this is his third time on Hard Knocks as well.
He missed out on winning a Super Bowl, and now here he is, you know, trying to – help guide this young team that is hopefully up and coming.
Bakers has two things going in his favor. I think one, he's been on the show before. Two, he's very well spoken, and he's the oldest guy. Like, he's the only guy over what, 28 or 29 or something like that on the whole roster. And so, like, that's that leadership, that veteran guy that, you know, he's gonna be at least a guy that gets brought up in the same conversation as Jared Goff, where it's like, hey, these guys were with the Rams and now they're not, and they got traded away and then the team wins the Super Bowl. So let's talk about that. They've also been on the show. So yeah, I think he's a natural storyline. Aleem is great. I don't know how much they can make a story out of him unless he just starts, like, you know, bench pressing people out on the field or something like that. Like, Aleem is going to be a fun guy for, like, the junkie, the O-line, D-line junkies to watch, like me. He's so strong, and his feet move at a pace that a man his size shouldn't move. And then when you put him against Ragnow, who's, you know, a 6'5", 320-pound, you know, super athlete in his own right, it's just it's just a beautiful dance to watch them tangle, and it's power and athleticism at its peak. I love it. I can't even, that's going to be my second favorite matchup to watch. You got the Sewell Hutchinson, and then Ragnow McNeil is just going to be awesome.
Obed did grow up in Lebanon. They left the country at 10. All right. So I was right, but I was worried that I wasn't.
So a couple other, I mean, Bugs is an interesting story. We could talk a little bit more about him. Yeah, he's a 300-pound nose tackle, right? And he played at Bama. So like a lot of the Bama guys, he is a one-gap, two-gap versatile player who's more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher. It's pretty standard with Alabama defensive linemen, especially the interior ones. He played more as like a defensive end, you know, 3-5 type of guy in at Bama, but he's more, he played nose tackle for the Steelers as a reserve. He's made splash plays here and there, but he's a little light for that nose tackle spot. So sometimes he loses his anchor. Sometimes he gets out leveraged, but he's a guy who is probably closer to Aleem McNeil than John Pennacini was, because Pennacini was more of a traditional nose tackle. Bugs has a little bit more of quickness to him. He just lacks that weight. So he's got that, like, first step, like Aleem. I mean, not as good as Aleem's, but he's a little bit more agile than you would expect out of a traditional nose tackle, but that's not surprising considering he's a little lighter too.
Moving, I don't know. Do we want to move on yet? I don't know. I'm trying to look for a story. There's no real stories here outside of Hutchinson for the obvious reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I think Romeo on the pup is going to be a good story for the edge guys. And Chris Harris,
the brothers.
Yep. Yep. You know, yeah, that in its own is going to be a good story. You talk about, like, you know, they love tapping into roots, you know, with the Nigerian pipeline on this defense is just, you know, it's very prevalent. Jayshon Cornell has roots. The Aquaras, Owarie, Melifanwu, Jeff Okuda, they all have Nigerian roots. And I know I'm missing a couple too, because I'm just glancing at it real fast. But these guys, it's a great storyline. Romeo was a, you know, big time signee last year. Now he's hurt. His brother is in this hybrid role where he could possibly, you know, get a lot of playing time. Second year with the new regime, you got a former third round pick. It's good. Then you also have Charles Harris, who's the reclamation project, who is probably going to start. And in all honesty, he's been pretty consistent in the spring. And so, like, if he continues to be consistent like he is, he's going to be better than just like a reserve that is starting because Romeo's hurt. He's going to be like, he can be a legitimate NFL start. Yeah. Like, and there's a lot of things that he does really well. And I think if he just continues that working the way he has and producing the way he has, there's a real shot that he is, he's going to be like a real force opposite Hutchinson, because if Hutchinson draws the double teams like we're expecting, if Aleem draws the double teams like we're expecting, you're going to get Charles Harris one-on-one a lot. And he's shown that, you know, he's been able to tap into something a little bit more than he has in the past. And the coaching staff believes in him. They know how to put him in the right spots. And it's a good storyline, you know? So, you know, Pascal is on the pup. So we don't know when we're going to see him. So him and Romeo are both on the pup. So Pascal's injury, because he's on the pup and not the NFI, means that it was a re-aggravation of his college injury that he had happened during camp. It wasn't like a carryover from college that he would have been on the NFI, but because he came to camp, played at camp, then got injured, re-injured in camp, that's why he ends up on the pup list with that designation.
Well, this is the group that we really want. I don't know this, if this is, you know, if there's a group to watch and to watch improvement from, and that's going to be a big part. If this team is more successful, I mean, they were unsuccessful last year, but more successful than they were last year.
Yeah.
This is the group that has to improve the most. And it does have the potential to improve a lot. And, you know, hopefully we'll see some of that growth during training camp.
The last guy I want to mention in this group is James Houston, HBU, school, right? And HBCU school. And so he's it's another great storyline because he's Deion Sanders' first draft pick, right? So, and that's an easy
pick. No, yeah, you're right. First draft pick in the NFL. Yep.
Yep. And so he's going to be a great storyline. And I think they're really got a good chance to fight or for Houston to make a good story as well.
All right. Next up are the linebackers. You already mentioned Aquara, the Aquara brother, so we'll lay off of him. I would, if you look at this list of what we look forward to, the fans are going to be looking at Malcolm Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
He's on that first team defense at any point. Right. He's the created story of the offseason.
Yeah.
Randomly generated story of the offseason.
Well, I don't think he's going to end up there, at least not. Not early, right? It's going to take a couple preseason games before he starts getting out there. But who knows? I mean, this group is wide open. When I did my roster series with Jeremy, the head of the training camp, we did our training camp like roster battle series. I wrote the linebacker one, and I was basically like, everything's up in the air. Like there's nothing that is set at linebacker, and Anzalone will start. And it sure looks like Chris Board and Derek Barnes are going to be fighting for that other starting job, but nothing is guaranteed. And Kelvin Shepard basically came out and said that. He said, yeah, we're going to start Anzalone because he's got the most experience in the room, but that doesn't mean he's going to stay there. And that doesn't mean he's going to be wearing the green dot helmet. That could be anybody. And then at a previous interview, he talked about the fact that Malcolm Rodriguez was smart enough to hold that green dot. And in the past, we've seen Josh Woods hold that green dot when Anzalone got hurt. So, like, I don't think anything's guaranteed. And you could make an argument for, you know, that there's guys in here that aren't getting enough attention. Like Sean Dion Hamilton was probably going to make the roster last year, and he's looked at as kind of like an afterthought in this group because you have Anzalone probably starting. You've signed Chris Board. You drafted Barnes and Rodriguez, and that's four guys. And if you're going to keep a fifth, do you even need to keep a fifth? It's only going to be a handful. Could it be Anzalone or could it be Hamilton? Could it be Anthony Pittman, who played the most special team snaps? And, who knows what it can be? A lot of these guys have a better chance, I think, than what most people are giving them credit for. But yeah, I think Malcolm is the guy that fans are going to go gaga over.
Jared Davis.
Oh, I didn't even mention Jared.
Well, he's gone. You know, he was a first round draft pick of the team. They unceremoniously has an exit from the team. Now he's back.
and they wanted him back. And that, again, another easy story. Pittman's local, played at Wayne State, right? He's an easy story. Good story too, right? And but like, look, Davis, I think Davis is going to see more time on the edge than I think people are prepared for, because
well, that's where he kind of belongs, though.
It really is.
They like, might get more if and I'm not going to say he's going to be a star, but they're probably going to get the most out of him if they use him in that way.
I mean, look, he's a tick over 6'1". He's 240 pounds, which, and if you look at James Houston, he is
that same size,
right? It's exactly. He's a tick under 6'1", 244 pounds. They're almost identical in size. Now, Jared's a little bit more rocked up than the rookie is, and that's understandable. He's a professional athlete and has been for a while. But, like, these guys are so – they're already low to the ground. Then you add in this explosive first step. It's hard for offensive linemen to get a hold on them because – they're leaner. Now, if they do get a hold of them, it's, you know, you can wipe them out, but like, it's hard to get a hold of these guys, you know, because they're so quick. And just by the time you're reacting, they're past you a lot of the times. And you can't make a living as a permanent edge rusher at that size, but you could be a situational guy that really makes some noise. And again, if either one of those guys starts, you know, putting up sacks in the preseason, it's a very natural story for Hard Knocks to go after. And one that I think, you know, the local media would embrace as well.
All right. Going back to the defensive backfield, we'll start with the corners. The obvious story and the story that everybody's going to be watching the closest is going to be Jeff Okuda and his health. And you know, if he's healthy, how is he playing out there?
Right. Aaron Glenn just was on Schefter's podcast, came out today, Monday. And he basically said, Okuda's got to get over the injury bug. And once he gets past the injury bug, you know, we're expecting high things out of him. We know what we think he is. Now he needs to show us what we think he is. Right. And so he was asked directly if he thought Okuda could start 17 games. And he said, yeah, that's our expectation, is that Okuda will be healthy and ready to play and playing at a high level for 17 games. So he is not on the PUP. And now he technically can still go on. Possible he gets placed on Tuesday or maybe even Wednesday morning, because technically veterans don't report till Tuesday. But at the same time, they already placed Romeo on the PUP, so maybe they've already made their evaluations of the current injured players, and he's not on it. And then he'll be at camp and he'll be ready to go. And even if he's not on the PUP, there's still a chance they take the same approach they did in the spring, which is just use him in walkthroughs, use him in individual drills, and then maybe they'll start slowly working him into more team activities. Or maybe he's just ready to go and they just throw him right in the mix and he's day one doing everything. And we'll find that out, you know, soon enough. But I wouldn't be surprised if they still take it easy with him. But I fully expect him to be participating in practice like he was in the spring. And I still am in the Jeff Okuda camp, where I think he's going to have a good season, a good career. And a lot of people are going to, you know, feel like they jumped the gun early by saying he's not worth keeping around anymore, which is, I think, a bit.
Well, yeah, that's going a bit far. I mean, he's under contract. They probably wouldn't save much by cutting him. They at least need to see what they have, you know, and I hope you're right about Okuda, because it'll only make the team stronger. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Monty's on the starter opposite him. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of drama there.
Yep.
When it comes to guys down the roster, what about Jerry Jacobs, who looked pretty good before he got hurt?
Yep.
Is he going to be ready for training camp, and what are we going to expect?
So he's still on the PUP. He's going to open season on the PUP, but he can come off at any time. He's one of the guys that I actually kind of expect to come off the PUP at a certain point. He's been talking about being ready or close to ready for a while now. He seems very motivated, but he's got to be cleared. You know what I mean? He can be as motivated as he wants, but once he's got to be cleared. And once he is, it'd be interesting to see how quickly he gets back up into things, because granted, it's a different injury than what Okuda had, but if they decide to start working Jerry in slowly, it might take a while. He might not see like a preseason game one or two, might, you know what I mean? Like, he might not see the field till game three even. And if that's the case, we got to lower expectations for him a little bit and allow him to get back into NFL shape. And I think that's a realistic kind of timeline with him. Can he get back to where he was? Yes. Will he get back to where he was before the season? That's tough. I mean, we'll see what he can do, but it's a tough road to come back, you know, from an ACL in like 7 months. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why expectations are kind of low on Jameson Williams coming back too.
All right. What position is Will Harris going to be playing? How are they going to be using him during training camp?
I think he's going to be a corner, right? I mean, like he was almost exclusively a corner in the spring. In my opinion, with Jacobs coming along slowly and Okuda coming along slowly, I think Harris is probably going to start training camp as the starter opposite Oarie. Now, if Okuda's ready, then he's going to bump Harris, you know, to a third outside corner type of role. But I mean, with two injured guys, I think Harris is going to play corner. I think Mike Hughes is probably going to stay on the outside as well. And then Bobby Price, Mark Gilbert, those guys are going to stay on the outside. You probably see Cedric Boswell get some snaps on the outside as well. If he's healthy, remember he had a mild injury in the spring as well with his, I think it was his upper right thigh. Well, thigh quad, who knows what it was, but it was upper leg. He had the quad injury or thigh injury.
Lower body injury.
Yeah. He had one. That's what kept him out last year when he went on IR. So he had another one. But if he's ready, I think he's still going to be crossbred. I think he's going to still get snaps on the outside at corner, and he's also going to get snaps at safety as well. But for Harris, my guess is they're comfortable putting him on the outside.
AJ Parker, what about the inside corners?
I think that's going to be a fun battle. Parker's the incumbent. I think Hughes is going to get some looks there. Even though I think Hughes will be on the outside more, especially with the injury issues. I think Hughes is going to get some run in the middle to see if he can earn a starting job. And then I love Chase Lucas. I know I say this a lot, but
yeah, like, he's your guy this training camp.
Okay, 4 years ago when I was sitting when I was like, all right, everyone needs to watch this Tracy Walker kid. Like he's, I know he's on the third team, but he is like, he's got range, he's got speed. And I was really hyping Tracy Walker during the training camp. It's the same vibes. I'm getting those same types of vibes from Chase Lucas where I'm like, man, this guy moves the way it's just a little bit different. He's smart. He's calling out plays. Like there's just so many little things about him that just speak to me. And I'm worried that I'm getting out in front of my skis here because, you know, we haven't seen him in pads or anything yet, but the intangibles are really exciting to me. I could see him winning a starting special teams role. I could see him winning a starting nickelback role. I think he makes the roster at right now. If you ask me is he making it, I'm going to say yes, because there's just things I like about him. And I got that gut. It's just that little pit of my stomach thing that says, I like how this guy moves and I like what he does. And I'm here for him.
All right. Moving to the safety group, Tracy Walker, his spot is solidified. I don't think he's facing much competition, but the other safety spot, Deshaun Elliott, looks like he's going to be the starter, but
correct.
We have the rookie Kirby Joseph. We have, you know, CJ Moore's always lurking. What do you see out of the safety group?
Yeah, those four are your primary, like, pure safeties. Melifonwu is going to get mixed in a little bit.
Maybe Will Harris.
Maybe Savion Smith, who is in that kind of corner safety hybrid as well that I kind of glossed over a little bit before. In my opinion, when you're talking about the two guys that are going to play, like, your split zone main primary safety schemes, it's going to be Walker, Elliott, Joseph, and Moore. When you're talking about adding a third safety that's more matchup contingent, that's where you're going to see like Melifonwu, Will Harris, Savion Smith, those type of guys. When you want a guy who can play the slot, but is bigger than AJ Parker and Chase Lewis. Because AJ Parker and Chase Lewis are going to be really good at covering slot receivers, whereas like Melifonwu, Smith, Harris, those guys are going to be really good at covering tight ends. And so I do see that kind of slot role being a little bit more independent in how they attack it and playing more matchup based slots. Whereas you play more of a standard shell where you stay home on your at your top and your corner outside corner spots, those guys are going to be more shell based where they stay at home. Whereas your corners are going to be more guys that follow the offensive player on the field. So it's a little bit inverse of what you've seen, but this is what we've seen in the past as Lions fans. But it in the split zone, that is the way that you can adapt to, you know, what they're trying to accomplish, right? So yeah, that's my guess. I do think Kirby is a fun story. Elliott's an interesting story coming from Baltimore. From a hard knock standpoint, Tracy's the guy. I mean, his cousin was murdered, right? And that made national news. And so they will absolutely talk about that. They'll have interviews with him if they haven't already. I just got a new contract. They've got video of Campbell saying, "This is your team now." And so like, there's leadership that goes with him. And so, I mean, Tracy should be an early story for a couple of reasons. I'm happy for him to get that opportunity because, you know, he's an ascending player that I think still has room to grow. Right. And so he could be a good storyline.
All right. Special teams, Austin.
I'm going to applaud you. I'm sorry. One time. I just want to talk about one more guy.
All right.
Brady Breeze. Brady Breeze is a guy who we kind of look over a lot, or we overlook a lot, I guess I should say. Breeze was a rookie last year out of Oregon. They claimed him. They signed him off the Tennessee Titans practice squad, I believe. Got him off waivers from Tennessee. I forget which one. Regardless, they acquired him at the end of the year. They had him he was on the roster for the last 4 weeks. He played basically special teams. His first game that he came, it was just a depth thing. They had injuries in the secondary, but he's basically like a special teamer. He's a hard worker. He's a guy that I think people should kind of like, just make sure you know his number, because he's a guy who is a bit of a sleeper for the position. If somebody was going to like, you know, usurp CJ Moore, it could be Breeze. Like, that's the guy that I think no one's really talking about that we need to be paying attention to.
All right. Now,
yep.
For the special teams group, the kicking competition, Riley Patterson and Austin Seibert, maybe we'll get a little bit of when they were in Tampa on Hard Knocks, where I can't remember the defensive tackle's name. Was it Baker? He was just screaming at the kicker, and then he would just start shaking his head every time he missed the kick. You know, he stood in the backfield. Coaches just let it happen, which added the pressure.
I don't know if we'd see that, it's going to be a good competition. Patterson was 13 of 14 last year. Seibert was 10 of 12. Both of them were perfect on all their extra point attempts. So they were a little inconsistent in the spring. And I think we saw last year, you know, if you're inconsistent, this coaching staff isn't going to keep you around. Remember last year, they cut all their kickers before camp, before the preseason. They were like, yeah, we don't like any of you. And they cut them all. Mm-hmm. And so
they've got part of the coach's job.
Yeah, they got to show up. But I like both their potential. I thought both of them played well when they had their opportunity. I still gut feeling am on Patterson here. Seibert is more of a veteran, so not much more, but that carries a little bit of weight with former players as coaches. But Patterson is a guy that I know the front office really, really liked they tried to get him. And then he ended up in New England. And then when they had the opportunity to get him, they were able to. And I know they were really ecstatic to get him. So I do think Patterson has in my mind, I think has the better shot, but I mean, who knows? We'll see. We'll have to see what happens when they start, booting them in camp. Now, if we want to go beyond the kickers,
booting it. Oh, I thought you were talking about Jack Fox.
No. I mean, Fox is going to be awesome. Like Daly's doesn't have competition, you know, so unless Mule unretires or something. Right. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be a lot of other competitions on special teams that go beyond just the kickers. Like last year they had, I just wrote this article, so it should be somewhat fresh in my head. It hasn't published yet. It's going to publish Tuesday, but they had 16 players who had over 100 special team snaps of non-kickers. Of those 16, five of them were safeties, four of them were linebackers, two edge rushers, two running backs / fullbacks, a corner, a wide receiver, and a tight end. Okay, so very heavy back seven defense guys, linebackers and defensive backs, right? And of those, of their top guys, they retained them all. Pittman, Jason Kabinda, Igwebukwe, CJ Moore, and Bobby Price. Those were their top five last year, as far as snap counts. Kabinda and Moore were their top two as far as like PFF. But Moore and Igwebukwe, Price, Pittman, they were all either had eight or nine tackles. Like those four guys accounted for 40% of the special teams tackles, just those four guys. Right. And so all of them are back. All of them have a good shot to make the team because of that. Now in Jeremy's last 53-man projection, and even in our roster stack, we all had Pittman and Price on the outside looking in. So that means there's opportunities for other people to step up if those guys don't make the team. And then when you look a little bit beyond those two guys, you lost Kadero Hodge, who was one of your starting gunners. You lost Reeves Maben, who was one of your better special teamers over the last four years. And you lost Dean Marlowe, who also had like 100 special team snaps. Now you have ready-made replacements for them. Kirby Joseph was an excellent special teamer at Illinois. He played gunner. He played other special teams roles where he could fill in for, he could take Marlowe's spot. He could take Kadero Hodge's spot. Coach Campbell has talked about the fact that Trinity Benson could be a gunner. If he makes a team, that might be a big reason why. Chase Lucas has got special teams experience. Malcolm Rodriguez has special team experience. And then Chris Board is a guy that was specifically brought in for his linebacker, you know, upside, but he's one of the better special teamers in the league, right? And, you know, he had 380 snaps on special teams last year for Baltimore. He had his PFF score was like 85 or something like that on special teams. Like Board is going to come in and he's going to have a key role as well, whether he's starting or not, he's still going to contribute on special teams. So there's a lot of ready-made guys to kind of fill in some of those spots. Which guys go where and who fits is, you know, we're still going to figure that out as we go, but they do retain a lot of the guys. They retain a lot of important guys, but a couple of those guys have work to do. But it's going to be something that I think a lot of people overlook because special teams doesn't get the attention because it's that third piece of the puzzle, right? But it's an important factor when you're weighing out who makes 53 roster and who doesn't.
Right. Now, when it comes to the coaches, we're going to see a ton of Dan Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
See a lot of Aaron Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They'll probably talk to Ben Johnson. I wonder which position coach they'll focus in on.
They've already talked. They didn't interview. One of the Hard Knocks people didn't interview with the Free Press and they brought up Aubrey Pleasant already.
Okay.
So, and again, not overly surprising because his name has been tossed around for defensive coordinator positions this past offseason. So he's probably going to get some FaceTime. I think Deuce Staley, it's going to be impossible to ignore him because Deuce is just loud. Like, he is the loudest person at training camp. You know what I mean? Like, he just, he loves the competition. He gets excited. He gets pumped up. And it's just, the cameras are not going to be able to turn away from Deuce. So, yeah, the coaches are going to be a big part of the Hard Knocks. And you know what? It's not going to stop there. I think it's going to go to the front office. I think Brad Holmes, it's his third time.
What about Sheila?
And Sheila's going to be a big focus.
Not Rod Wood.
He'll get his FaceTime. He has a sneaky way of doing that, like almost all the time, right? Six female owners?
It's five now? Or six. It might be five.
I thought, yeah, because someone, there was that changeover recently, right? There's only a handful of female owners. Mm-hmm. The Fords have a long tradition because the Lions are one of the original NFL teams, right?
Well, but they don't go back that far. But yeah.
No, but they
the
go
Fords
back.
The Fords don't.
Right.
They go back to John F. Kennedy's assassination.
Right. Yeah. And, but it's passed, from father to wife to daughter. And then she's got an interesting storyline as well. You know, college athlete. She's been tried to break into the NFL.
Rejected from the NFL, even though her father owned one of the teams.
Yes, yes, exactly. Like, because they were like, we don't have a spot for him because it was still in the good old boys club.
Right, look who the commissioner is and who his father was.
right. But she's been trying to get her hands involved for decades. And again, it's very interesting storyline. I would love to know a little bit more. I think every time we learn a little bit more about Sheila Hamp, it endears her a little bit more. And for a fan base that just hates the Fords for the most part, a lot of them do.
Some good reason.
I understand. I understand. I would love to see a separation of, parent and child here.
She has the opportunity right in front of her.
Right.
To change everything.
And you know what? There's a lot of national people that are starting to come around and say, based on how the team won at the end of the season, maybe Dan Campbell's for real. When you look at how Brad Holmes is drafting and everyone likes that, well, maybe Brad Holmes is for real. And if now the Lions are gaining some positive energy and she's the orchestrator, right? She's the one that's hiring people and putting them in places to make these moves to make the team better. And when they want something, she gives it to them. And there's a credit that deserves to be there if this team finds success that she absolutely should be in line for. And so, we'll see. I think the Fords have long been a mystery and purposefully, right? And, I think if we saw HBO humanize her a little bit more, it might make might soften the fan base negativity towards her, which is, I don't know if she should be held to bear the sins of her father type of thing.
There's some, there's, that's true. There's some fairness in that.
Yeah. Look, a lot of good storylines to follow, a lot of good battles, and there's going to be players on this roster that get cut that are going to be claimed by somebody else. And that's not something you've said in past. Right. It's going to be a handful of guys that they want to bring back on their practice squad that they're not going to be able to. And you know what, they've still got holes, but they've still got opportunities.
They still have holes. They still need to add high end talent, but depth is beginning to come around.
Yes. And that's, I think part of Holmes's vision, right, is he's been trying to add depth. He's been trying to add pieces when he has the opportunity. But even when you look back at how he's drafted, how he's approached free agency, the goal still seems to be, we're ready to make a big push in 2023, not necessarily 2022, right? You're drafting guys that have injuries in the second round because you're, or even the first round, mm-hmm. because you're like, it's okay. I'm willing to take a guy who could be a game changer for 15 years, even if he misses half of his first year, because the value is there. Right. And so I think that's the goal. It's going to be a make or break year for a lot of these guys, but I think we're going to see it. That's makes for exciting football because everybody has to try and raise their game up. And look, let's not be foolish here and say that it's always going to be this like hefty competition. There's going to be stinkers and there's going to be games when, if a couple things go wrong, it's going to look bad, but like, mm-hmm. that's part of it. That's part of right. where they're at in the rebuild. But I think the optimism is warranted in the fact that they are, that I think they are progressing in the right way. And hopefully that gets highlighted by HBO this year.
All right. That's pretty much all we got. We're up to 417 reviews on Apple Podcasts. I didn't check on Spotify. We appreciate BC St. Louis wrote a nice little
review. Yeah, nice. Yeah, so it was that's a good one.
Very much appreciated. And for all the listeners, we appreciate them as well. Any thoughts on the new XFL, or maybe we should say TexFL, with three of the eight teams being housed in the great state of Texas?
I did not read much into it. I saw the okay. alert, but I didn't read up on it. I don't know if you have any information on it.
We have the coaches too that go with each of the teams, that article here. Okay, here we go. Coaches okay. and teams. Arlington, Texas, which is, you know, that's where the sure. Cowboys are based yeah. on, so the Dallas area. Bob Stoops is going to coach that squad.
Okay.
Houston's team is going to be coached by Wade Phillips.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's not giving yep. it up. Orlando's mm-hmm. being coached by Terrell Buckley, former nemesis boy. Of the Lions. All right. Las Vegas will be coached by Rod Woodson. Hmm. San Antonio will be coached by Hines Ward.
Oh, wow.
Seattle okay. will be coached by Jim Haslett. St. Louis will be coached by Anthony Becht. And the Washington, D.C. team will be coached by Reggie Barlow.
Do you think if Randall L. moves on eventually, I think Hines Ward could be a guy that I could see this coach staff going after.
Yeah, it's possible.
Sure. Yeah, I think he really would fit what they're looking for. Because I remember I looked into him when I was scouting a year ago, when I was like going through the different position groups and saying like, hey, do I think, who's the best receiver coach? Like, I was like, all right, well, who's a former player? All right. Well, Wes Welker, he's got a job. Like, and I saw Randall L, but I was like, man, that'd be, you know, I just thought that one was too good to be true, but you know, I end up with him. Right. But I was looking at Hines Ward, but Hines doesn't have that much experience yet. Right. Right. If I'm not mistaken, like he was just coaching high school. Right. I don't know what he did last year because I didn't need to follow up on it for the job. But Hines is just kind of breaking in. He's always been that smart player. He's got that rough, like, you know, gritty attitude that, that this coaching staff would gravitate to. So I do think Hines is a guy. And maybe they bring him in like as an assistant. Right now they've got Sean Ryan, in that assistant wide receiver position coach, right? The son of Rex Ryan. Was it Rex or Rob? I think it's Rex. I could see Hines being a guy who gets a shot. Oh, you know what we didn't mention? JT Barrett got hired as an
I totally forgot about that. Yep.
Loads of talent, but
never wanted to be a coach back at Ohio State, but things change.
Correct. Well, he had a lot of things at Ohio State that he said that were probably not the most eloquent, but yeah, he's changed, I guess, and he's bought into it, and I mean, he's good enough to get a shot here.
Yeah, special assistant job. We'll see. So, I mean, yeah. He's not going to be calling plays next year.
No.
He's just getting started on the coaching road. Speaking of that, Hines Ward, 2021, Florida Atlantic University hired Ward as special assistant to the head coach. Worked alongside wide receivers coach Joey Thomas. He was later promoted to the position of wide receivers coach. So I'm guessing that's his last job before the getting the XFL job.
All right. Good for Hines. I have no idea how JT Barrett will be, but I don't know. I'm excited.
I'm guessing he's not going to cost the Lions a game this year, but now who knows what might happen now.
If you know what, I mean, if anything, you know, he could help the backups become a little bit more mobile, maybe. You know what I mean? Maybe he'll have an indicator on how to help Goff not try and roll out of the back of the pocket, right into a sack. Like that would, if he can do that, you're worth whatever money he's getting paid. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. These are always interesting hires, and I don't know if we'll have access to him. I don't know how much we even know what he does, but it was an interesting ad over the weekend.
All right. That's it. That's all we got for this week. Did you have anything more to add, Eric?
Nope, that's it. I think it's exciting to see what's coming up. Training camp's going to be fun. I'm going to be out there as often as I can. And if you see me, say hi.
Yeah, make sure you say hi to Eric and see how he's doing. that's it for us. And just like that, football's back upon us. So until next time, Eric, let's go Lions.